27. You're correct, of course, Langdon says from the drone as it leads us toward an unfamiliar building. The square brick-and-steel building is built like a fortress, with tall walls, high windows, and two staggered levels. The second floor is a bit smaller than the first. Outer stairs lead to both roofs, which are walled in and perfect for fending off an attack. If I were to design a fortified security building, it would look like this. This facility is from your future, Mr. McCoy. In fact, you inspired much of what you see here. Maybe I did design the fortified building. How far in the future? I ask. 7 years. All this is 7 years? It doesn't seem possible that the almost quaint synergy facility I work at could become the shining beacon of militarization in 7 years. But nations have been destroyed and reborn in less time, so I suppose it's possible. I just can't fathom what would transform a company whose outward appearance favored the local economy, people, and environment into this. 4 drones zip past in formation, flying up and out of the facility before diving down the mountainside. All around, the sounds of machines at work fill the air, buzzing, grinding, and churning. Just below the din is a constant but pulsating hum, like muffled energy. I can feel it in my legs with each step, subtle but ever-present. Even stranger than all of this is that I haven't seen a single person. Synergy is both full of and completely devoid of life. A lot can change in 7 years, Langdon says, and I sense a bit of remorse in his voice. The world is a different place than you know. Science, once revered for its contributions to society, became the scapegoat for all the world's perceived problems. Facts no longer mattered. Truth was shunned. Violence won most arguments. The world became petty, ruled by squabbling children. The town that once embraced this company turned against us in the name of Jesus himself. Several employees were slain, including members of your own team. Not Cassie, I guess, trying to sound hopeful. She survived, Langdon says. There's a hint of something in his voice. Anger, I think. It's hard to tell without being able to see his face. While there were still some countries open to the reality of scientific knowledge, advancement, and achievement, much of the world had resorted to a kind of suburban tribalism. Sensing a civil war brewing, I took steps to ensure the safety of my staff and our research. But it wasn't enough. Attacks on the facility became more organized, more deadly. I thought I'd prepared for the war to come, but in the end, the only way I could save my work was to retreat. Into the past, I guess. Some of what he's saying gels with the existence of Minuteman and his people, but I find it hard to believe that Cassie would get caught up in the kind of religious fervor he's describing. It's been a long time since I set foot in a church, but even I know that Jesus would turn the other cheek before raising a hand in violence. Then again, history is full of people using God, all gods, as justification for unspeakable violence against people of other races, religions, and regions. The Spanish Inquisition, the conquistadors, the Nazis, modern white supremacists, the very founding of the United States. All that blood in the name of a God who so clearly opposed violence. I wish I could say Langdon's story is completely unbelievable, but it's not. The rumblings of such a future already exists in my time. The only real stumbling block is Cassie. I just can't imagine a future where she is a militarized religious zealot.
Why not just leave?
Owen asks. The drone continues toward the building, but the camera swivels toward the boy. Everything you see and cannot see around you is unique and irreplaceable. Nothing like it exists anywhere else in the world. I feel like that's obvious, my father says with a slight grin, seeing as how we're 1,000 years plus in the past. The comment manages to get a chuckle out of Langdon, which is good. I'm having a hard time not sounding combative, and the moment Langdon figures out I'm not with him, I'll be against him. That's not going to go well for us. My father's lighter touch is welcome. But there must be something else, my father says. Something that ties you to this mountain. It's a special place for anyone who stays here long enough. We all have our reasons for calling it home and coming back to it. I grew up here. I'm raising my son here. My wife is buried. The drone stops, the camera locked onto my father's face. Something he said hit a nerve. And then I know. Jacqueline. While Langdon was the scientific and entrepreneurial genius behind the company, his wife was the heart and soul. She made time to connect with everyone, bring a touch of home-style affection to every meeting. I only met her a few times, but every encounter was positive, and the one time I saw her with Langdon, I knew he adored her. The coldness I sense in him now, even through this machine, only makes sense if she is no longer here. How did it happen? The drone continues forward, hovering at half pace. Langdon is silent for a good 10 seconds and then says, "She died in that first attack, killed by the people of Black Creek whom I had hoped to help, whom she had convinced me to help. I would have been happy to buy all the land and send everyone away, but she insisted we do the right thing. And what did we get for it? A revolt, violence, blood, all of which you did little to stop. As dedicated as you were to this company, you wouldn't kill the people of Black Creek in defense of my wife." The contempt in his electronic voice is potent. While he might not blame me for his wife's death, he is no friend of my future self. But would I really not defend Synergy from any threat, even one that I know? That doesn't sound like me. Like I said, a lot can change. The drone pauses by a metal door on the side of the brick building. It turns to my father once more. "My wife is buried on this mountain as well, and now I'm afraid all I'm married to is my research." The door opens on its own, providing entry into a long, sterile white hallway with no markings, no decor, and no guards. "Mr. McCoy, all three Mr. McCoys, please step inside." The threat isn't overt, but it sets my insides twisting. He knows who my father and Owen are, knows what they mean to me, knows I will do anything to keep them safe, including unconditional surrender. He hasn't pointed a weapon at me, but there's no need. We're surrounded by a robotic army from the near future and have already seen the damage they can inflict. "I realize this must be disconcerting for you," Langdon says. "You've had your world turned inside out. But there have been some positive benefits, wouldn't you say? Reunited father and son, A life spared, a young life free from grief. Let's say we keep it that way." I allow my father and Owen to enter first, taking one last look around, searching for weaknesses and finding none. I step into the hall and follow my father toward the ominous unknown via a featureless corridor. Our footsteps echo as we walk, but the ever-present droning buzz lingers behind. I turn to face Langdon's drone. This is apparently where we part ways. "Take your first right, the rest will be self-explanatory. Should our quest come to a successful conclusion, you will be allowed to leave, and with luck, live out the rest of your natural lives." With that, the drone's camera retracts into its body before it turns and zips away. A moment later, the door closes on its own, leaving us alone in the barren hallway. "Sorry I brought you here," I say. My father shakes his head. "No way to know what we'd find, and near as I can tell, this is still the only place you're going to find answers. And if I'm honest, I'd rather be in here, where the guns are pointed out instead of at us." He's got a point. The mountainside is far from safe. But I'm not convinced Langdon will honor his offer to let us live if his mission, whatever that is successful. "I think it's cool," Owen says. "Did you see all the robots? It's like Blade Runner out there, but for real, and without Harrison Ford."
"You've seen Blade Runner?" my father asks.
"It's Scott Flanagan's house,"
both Owen and I say.
"Keep moving,"
says an impatient voice, broadcast from a hidden intercom. Aside from Langdon, it's the only other trace of humanity we've encountered.
"And I don't want any shit, so don't give it to me."
I recognize the voice. It's different, angrier, but the inflections are the same. I take the lead, heading for the T-junction ahead. When I turn the corner, I'm faced with a gateway and a glassed-in security booth. Behind the glass, I look into a pair of eyes that are familiar but changed. Where there used to be good humor, there is now only disdain and scars. Still, I'm relieved to see him.
"Kuzneski, what are you? Shut the fuck up!"
he snaps. Of all the men on my team, he was the closest to being a friend. But whatever goodwill there once was between us has clearly been lost.
"I don't know what I did to you," I say, "or how things played out, but that's not who I am."
His glare softens for a moment and then flares back to life.
"It's who you will be, and that's enough."
He points his chin at my father and Owen.
"Is this a little asshole your kid self?" Though we've just recently been picked up, he's been briefed on who we are and where we're from. He's surrounded by four screens I can only see the back of, but I'd guess three show security feeds and one allows him to communicate with Langdon, or whoever else is in charge around here.
You're an asshole,
Owen says. My father holds him tight, but doesn't scold him for the language. Yeah, that's you, Kuzneski says and pushes a button. The door beside his station unlocks with a thunk while a buzz fills the air. Enjoy your stay at Hotel Fuck You. If you need anything, feel free to eat a dick. I smile despite myself. He genuinely doesn't like me, but I can't help but be amused by his foul-mouthed sense of humor, no matter how dark or foreboding it has become. Don't smile at me, he grumbles. Just don't. My father opens the door, revealing what might have once been a dormitory for security forces, now used as a jail, and it is overflowing with prisoners. It's not too late, I tell Kuzneski. Whatever reason you're still working for him, we can work it out. Funny, he says. You said the same thing before doing this. He traces his finger along a scar on his cheek. And this. He tugs the collar of his shirt down, revealing an old bullet wound. There are more, too, but I'm not a fucking stripper. Now, he flips me the bird and then uses the extended finger to point toward the open door. My father and Owen wait just inside, frozen by dozens of people who have stopped what they were doing to stare at the newcomers. I'm about to try getting through to Kuzneski one more time when I hear a small voice say, Cassie?